Hi, Sam.
Hi, Lauren.
Are you ready to talk about Mulholland Drive?
I am, because after all,
we are the Watchers of Movies. Hello.
Hello. I think that it's possible that the night insects may come through, which is kind of,
yeah,
it's like a summer ambiance.
Those frogs. If I ever say to someone, oh, the frogs are so horny now, if you're ever wondering why, it's because I can hear them,
yeah,
screaming how horny they are outside my window.
I love that noise. I love the noise of the night. I love night noises.
I do too. Mm-hmm. I cannot stand the birds in the morning.
I love the birds.
Up. It drives me nuts. I can't. I can't deal with it.
I like nature
They're
sounds.
They're so annoying. Like, I can't. So, anyway, some sad news, you guys. We have done some talking, and we've decided that this is going to be our last episode. I knew I was going to get emotional doing this. I really love you guys, and we both really love you guys, and it's been an amazing, amazing journey, and there's been, like, I mean, it's just been a lot of learning and a lot of, you know, we got closer, I feel like, and we got to review some really great movies and some not so great ones. But I've had just a great time the whole time. And this is a hard decision, but I think it's the right decision.
Yeah, it's been super fun. We were an OG podcast. We started before the pandemic.
Yes, we did.
So all you pandemic podcasts can suck it. And we just did it. Two women in Michigan who like to talk about movies. And I think it's really cool that we got regular listeners along the way who gave us suggestions.
Yeah.
I think it's really cool. My friends and your friends that listened, Mike really liked to listen. He would always get excited that there would be a new podcast on Mondays.
Aww.
Waiting for him. And he did the music for us, which is so cool. And now we get the natural ambiance of somebody breaking into a vehicle. But no, I think it's really cool Mike did the music for us, and people reach out to us and say, you should do this movie, you should do this movie, and, you know, we got to do some interviews, and so
yeah,
it's been a pretty fun ride.
It has been really fun.
It's been pretty cool, and, you know,
yeah,
so
it's unfortunately reached its end, and we feel like I personally am going on to different things, and I don't know what your plans are, but we'll see.
Well,
you know, the future is wide open.
Fade into oblivion.
No, don't do that.
Like a wisp of a
the
cloud.
The world is your oyster. I never
just
understood
floating
that.
Off
what does that even mean? The world
into
is your
the
oyster.
Breeze.
She just wants to evaporate
without a care in the world.
Like an evanescent.
Does it mean that, you know, the world is your oyster, as in there's a treasure to be found?
Oh.
If you explore.
Or if you get something irritating, you just cover it, and then it turns into something beautiful.
And then it becomes
right?
a pearl.
Exactly. So.
Yes.
So, yeah. We really appreciate you guys listening, and we love you guys a
yeah,
lot.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for the suggestions.
Yes, but we are leaving you with one last episode. So this is going to be it.
And this is the end.
This is it. And
my
thank you
only
to John.
Friend.
To John for suggesting this.
Thank you to John for
yeah.
suggesting this. Though it remains to be seen on if I'm truly thankful to John for suggesting this.
So, do you want to just get right into it?
I guess.
Okay. All right. Okay. Whew, this feels just sad. I'm like, my heart is like a little breaky right now. You know, achy, breaky heart.
Well, that's,
you know why I made that
perfect
reference?
Song to
know.
Reference for this
know,
episode.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's talk about the movie.
Yeah. Why don't you give a synopsis? I'm going to leave that to you.
All right. So, I had to do some Googling as to what the fuck this movie meant, because it's very David Lynchian, which I really like David Lynch's stuff. I really like Twin Peaks. I would love to watch it again. And Twin Peaks had like four or five different iterations. So it's been highly successful. Also, I follow Kyle MacLachlan on TikTok, and he references Twin Peaks all the time, and it's super adorable. So he's always like, "That's a damn good cup of coffee," and I'm like, "Kyle MacLachlan, you're so cute." I love it. I just love it. Anyway, so this movie is about a woman named Betty / Diane, and she finds a woman named Rita / Camilla in her aunt's home. And Camilla / Rita doesn't have any memory of what happened to her, but she was in a car accident and she hit her head. So this is where we are. And then all of a sudden it switches, and these people who we'd previously been established as are now somewhat different people. And something different is happening. And this is a really terrible explanation and summarization. But I kind of feel like we just have to get into it, you know? It's very David Lynchian. It's a little unsettling, a little weird, you know? He's like a master at that. So let's talk about it. So what did you think of the movie?
I didn't particularly care for it. I thought that, so the first two acts of the movie are like Betty and Rita, and then the third act is like Camilla and Diane, mm-hmm. played by Betty and Rita, and I'm left to wonder what the heck the first two acts were, what was happening. I felt like the pacing in this movie was so terrible. It was so bad. There, if I took a drink every time the camera focused on back, this eyes, these eyes, these eyes, these eyes, then finally a line, and not even a very good line, I would be drunk in the first 10 minutes because it's so ridiculous. I thought the production value was really low. It reminded me of The Room, the Tommy Wiseau movie, or I don't know if you ever saw Birdemic, but it kind of reminded me of that, where it's weird, low-budget, bad production value, bad acting, sort of supposed-to-be thriller movies. I thought that the performances in this movie were, like, so terrible, and I thought it just had terrible ambiance. It looked chintzy. It felt chintzy. I don't like things that are weird for the sake of being weird. Like, the movie Brazil is really weird, and I'm on the fence about if I would call it a great movie or even a good movie, but...
Who's that with?
It was weird. You're putting me on the spot. It's a Terry Gilliam movie. I don't remember the actor that's okay. in it, but it's a weird movie, but the setting is also weird. Like, it's in this weird futuristic sort of limbo, and so the weirdness kind of makes sense, but in Mulholland Drive, it's normal life and normal world, and then just weird things are happening, and that really irritates me. It just feels like somebody flexing in a mirror almost, and I do not like it.
Like a Patrick Bateman in the middle of having sex with a prostitute. Yeah,
like, look how weird I can make this, and that's not something that sex I work. Enjoy. So, I don't know. I feel like it redeemed itself slightly because of the twist, but then when the movie ended, I was asking myself, why couldn't the movie just be the story that they unfolded in the last act, because that was actually like pretty interesting? Or why couldn't the movie just be the story that they established in the first two acts, because that was interesting? But then all this stuff happening around it, I don't know. I don't really think I care for David Lynch that much. I've seen clips of Twin Peaks, and every time I see it, I'm like, what is this garbage? So, no offense, but last episode I got a lot of.
I'm not David Lynch, I don't care.
Out. But anyway, what did you think? Oh, also, there was one other thing I wanted to tell you. Yeah. So, I've spent the last, like, 15 years thinking I've seen Mulholland Drive, and I've never seen it.
That's hilarious.
I took a class when I was in college. I took a film class, and it was a film class where the professor could choose what, like, sort of genre or what we're going to talk about. And he chose film noir. So all semester we watched film noirs, and we watched the movie L.A. Confidential. And I believe Mulholland Drive is part of the plot in L.A. Confidential, if I even remembering that correctly.
And I've seen it, but I don't remember that either.
Because of that, I have just sort of mixed the two up in my head. So when we talked about Mulholland Drive recently, I think in a different episode, and I was like, yeah, I've seen that. And then I started watching this movie, and I was like, I have not seen this. And then I thought about it, looked in a little bit more, and I was like, okay. Because I was like, where's Kim Basinger? I thought she was in this.
Okay.
So anyway. That makes sense. This is the first time I'd seen Mulholland Drive, but I think you've seen it before.
Seen it before.
What did you think?
Well, okay. So from what the only memory I had of that entire movie, so it was basically like a brand new movie. I knew that there was like the two female leads. I did not remember that they were in a relationship, like a romantic relationship. The only
you forgot thing, all the boobs.
Yeah, I forgot all the boobs.
So many boobs.
So many boobs. The only thing I really remember is the scene where Betty is auditioning with that man. Okay. So that was the only thing I remembered, and I barely remember that. I just remember it being like kind of sexy, a little, you know, like I was like, okay. But anyway. Well,
her acting in that scene was where she was auditioning was better than the acting in the rest of the movie.
So
if that was intentional, my hat's off.
I think it was intentional. So like a typical, this is the perfect movie end on because I liked it.
And of course, I didn't hate it as much as I hate, say, like Hitler or communism, not communism, sorry, Hitler or slavery.
I just love how you're like the worst, most terrible thing I can think of. Like, you know?
We'll get into it.
We'll get into it.
I'm not surprised you liked it.
No,
I don't mean that. I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean my strong feelings about it do not surprise me that you have opposite strong feelings.
I just love that you're like, yeah, I know. I'm not surprised you liked it. No offense or anything. I'm like, I don't. I think I have a tolerance for more of the strange and weird than you do. I have a much higher tolerance for
that. I just don't like it when people are like, look how weird this is, and when I feel like a movie is telling me look how weird this is, that like nothing makes me more angry than I'm being like when I'm
holy motors.
Do you want to
exactly
I think
that.
I've said this before,
holy
but
like, this is super weird, and we're like, yeah, we know, so tell us the plot, and they were like, no,
it's just weird.
It's just a weird movie, just accept it.
You know what also annoys me, and I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, is the phrase "let that sink in." I hate that phrase. Whenever somebody says "let that sink in," to me it sounds like you're an idiot, so I have to tell you to think about this phrase.
Yeah.
And I feel like this movie should be called "Let That Sink In," because that's how much I hate how weird it was.
Kind of sounds like you didn't really like the movie.
I think overall I probably didn't. I'm just saying slightly redemptive because the twist. Like, I was like, what's this now?
Wait, so, okay, so I actually found something. I don't know if you, did you go on Wikipedia, I'm assuming, after this?
I actually did not.
Oh, surprising. Okay. So
it is surprising. I'm not sure why I didn't, but.
This is cool, because then I can tell you this.
Oh, also, I have to tell this story. So, on Monday, Lauren texted me with this awesome news that Mulholland Drive was only 88 minutes. So then I put all of my, like, plans to be on time. Like, I put everything on hold. I was like, so I took Monday off because the Oscars were Sunday. So I like to take the day after the Oscars off.
I love it.
In case I win something. And so I was at home and I was sort of like lazing around playing a little Animal Crossing. And I thought maybe I should watch the movie right now, get it out of the way, so I'm not watching it late into the night. And then Lauren swoops in and texts me, Mulholland Drive's 88 minutes. And I'm like, girl, I could start that at 10 o'clock and still be done before midnight.
For this. It and was Google's fault.
I'm just going about my business, doing absolutely nothing. Not anything of redemptive. Well, not so true. I cleaned a little bit. So I did some, like, something of redemptive value. But otherwise, I'm just, like, lazy, playing video games, watching TV, wandering around, just anything, because I'm like, the movie's so short. And then I get the movie and start it, and it's over 2 hours. Yes. And I was up till midnight watching this movie.
To be fair, when I googled it, Google said Are you listening over there, Google? I know you're listening because you always are. I have Google Home. It said 88 minutes long. And then when I looked it up on IMDb, there were two fucking different versions of Mulholland Drive. One's 88 minutes.
Why didn't we do the 88 minute one?
I don't.
Okay. I'm just kidding. I don't know what.
I don't know. I mean, they probably could have made it 88 minutes.
Oh, they could have. They could have cut an hour out of this movie.
You think so?
Oh, big time. Well, see, this is my review. To me, they could have cut an hour out of it, cut out some of the weirdness, and I think they got a hit on their hands, you know? A really good movie.
I think that, see, so to me, like, it never really felt like it was drying out or anything. It felt like it was pretty well-paced. I liked it. So I read on Wikipedia that there is, so I'm going to give you the theory that I read because I did not come up with this theory myself. I don't remember where I read it, so sorry online, but whatever. Anyway, there are 10 clues to unlocking the thriller. The first is, pay particular attention to the beginning of the film. At least 2 clues are revealed before the credits. I was trying to think of that. I couldn't think of anything. I don't know. I don't know if you...
2 clues?
Yeah, before the credits.
Okay.
Notice the appearances of the red lampshade.
I do know that when they called Diane the first time. And then when you find out Diane is Naomi Watts.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's her lamp.
Can you hear the title of the film that Adam Kesher is auditioning actresses for? Is it mentioned again?
Was it?
I do not even remember what the name was.
Oh.
I didn't actually write my notes until after. I just wanted to, like, pay attention to the film, you know? Because I feel like sometimes I'll start writing something and I won't pause it, so I'll miss something. So I was just like, you know, just pay attention and just write them after.
Yeah.
Number 4 is, an accident is a terrible event, and notice the location of the accident, which is Mulholland Drive. We know mm-hmm. that, so I don't know. Who gives a key and why?
Well, the accident, I think, happened where Camilla showed Diane the secret entrance.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's right. Who gives a key and why? So we have the Mark Pellegrino's character, who's a hitman.
Yeah.
He, by the way, he is very good at playing a lot of really shitty guys, because he was in Dexter and he was an abusive asshole in that. And then he played the devil in Supernatural and he was just an obnoxious asshole in that. I could not stand him. I was like, give me like a sexy Satan.
I think he was really good at being an inept hitman in this movie.
So I think so too.
He kills the like one guy, people. Shoots through the wall, kills his secretary, gets caught by the janitor, has to kill the janitor. And yeah. then in the cherry on top is that the vacuum is running, so he shoots the vacuum and kills that.
Anyway, I thought he should have left the vacuum running. I was like, that would have been a perfect way, whatever. Anyway, so he gave the key to her, but then there was another key. There was like a triangular key.
Yeah, that they just found.
In her purse. Yeah. Notice the robe, the ashtray, and the coffee cup. So I noticed the ashtray.
Mm-hmm. The piano ashtray?
Yeah. So the woman came over, she got her ashtray, and then, like, the next scene it was back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, what is felt, realized, and gathered at Club Silencio? I mean, that's real. They realized that. I mean, I guess they felt, like, sadness and emotion. So, Rebecca Del Rio is actually a real person. She's the singer. Fantastic voice, by the way. I know that was, like, a recording, but I'm assuming that's her real voice. What was I saying about that? Oh, so I think she was singing about, like, crying or sadness or something. So they, like, felt sadness, realized that the entire thing was actually recording, because I think that there was a minute there where they weren't totally sure, and then gathered, I guess. I don't know.
Well, they got the purse that had the box in it that fit the key.
Okay.
I'm just going to be the first to say that none of this is helping me solve the movie, but let's just keep going.
Okay. 8. Did talent alone help Camilla? I'm going to say no. I think Justin Theroux's character was, like, really into her.
It seemed like it, and she seemed kind of like a scumbag.
She did. Oh, like, big time. She seemed like a major scumbag.
She was in a relationship where she led Diane on.
Yeah, for sure.
Then ended that for Justin Theroux's character.
Right.
And then appeared to be cheating on him with another woman.
Melissa George's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was Camilla named Camilla in the dream or whatever it was. Hallucination, dream, right. Whatever it was. So she clearly is a real cad.
Yeah. Note the occurrences surrounding the man behind Winkies.
Yeah, what is the point of that?
Yeah, see, that was what... So there was that one dude who... I feel like I know I've seen that actor and stuff before.
Yeah, the dark-haired guy.
Yeah, with the dark eyelashes. Dark eyes,
yeah.
I thought maybe he was the same dude who was in... who played like the schizophrenic man in The Dark Knight Rises, but I don't think that's him.
No, that's not him, no. But he's kind of like that one guy in that one thing. Patrick Fischler is his name.
Yeah.
And let's just see.
What the fuck was he in?
He was in... he was in The Right Stuff. He was in Old School. He was in...
Old School, I've seen.
American Fiction.
Oh.
Which we didn't review. Twister, allegedly.
Oh.
I
wouldn't remember him then.
Idiocracy.
I've seen
Friend of the Family. He was in A Friend of the Family, which I believe you watched, about the girl who, on Peacock, she was like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. Oh, about...
Once Upon a Time. He was in the show Once Upon a Time, which I know you used to like. I don't know.
It doesn't say.
Okay. He was in The Black Dahlia.
Okay.
The Great Buck Howard. I don't know if you know any of these. Monk. Speed. He was in Speed.
Okay.
He was in Something's Gotta
Give. I've seen him in just bits and pieces. It's just nothing that I can really fully put my finger on. Bits and bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and then, so... So that was weird. That's like this guy who's talking about how he's got this dream, blah blah blah, and then we see him later and he was kind of just like, hey, how's it going? And it was like, did she... okay, anyway,
I don't know.
I have more thoughts, so I wanna...
wasn't sighing at you, I was sighing at the movie.
No, okay. I'm not, I didn't take it that way.
Yeah.
I just want to finish this last one, then I want to get into it because I feel like I'll go off on a tangent.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one is, where is Aunt Ruth? So we know that she was
in Canada.
She was supposedly in Canada. But then I think...
She was just in her apartment. Who knows?
Who even knows?
I don't even know what's going on.
Tell you something. So today I was talking to my coworkers about how I have a candlestick phone, you know? And I was like, you know, it's like the type of phone where you're like, hello, how are you doing now? And they were all like, I love your accent. I was like, oh my God, thank you. I just thought you'd enjoy that.
I'm Catherine Hepburn. See?
I'm like, you sound like, I can't even think, but I have. Okay.
It's just resolving. Oh boy. Resorting to noises.
It is. So I did not come up with this myself, but I looked it up online. Again, I don't remember the website, whatever at this point. And they said that what they think happened is that, so everything, this is my interpretation of this part. Everything went once Rita/Camilla opens the blue box and we see this darkness inside. Everything before that is like a dream that Diana's having. That's my theory. And then everything after that is what actually happened. And I think the dream is, well, first of all, I think it kind of paints Diane/Betty as a very kind of a manipulative person, because she's dreaming about her ex-girlfriend having basically being helpless and having amnesia. So she's like, oh, I can start fresh again with this. You know what I mean? And I've seen like plenty of over the top, you know, dramatized, like the one I can think of is Devious Maids. Devious Maids is like a telenovela, but it's in English. And actually, it was a telenovela before it was made for American audiences. But it's like on Lifetime. And in every season, even though they live in like the absolute richest part of like California, like it is like mansions that are probably more than $10 million. Like it's a very, very rich neighborhood. For some reason, someone gets murdered every season. Or multiple times sometimes. But there's this one where one of the guys hits his head and he gets into a coma and he has amnesia. Explosive amnesia. It's from Futurama. Anyway, so he gets amnesia and his ex, his turd, horrible, horrible ex, turd of a wife. She's a turd. She's a giant fucking turd.
Turd isn't used as an insult nearly enough these days.
She's like, Spence, I'm your wife. We're in love with each other. We have a son together. And he was like, she's like dimming out on him with like some other dude, and he's like having an affair with like his, you know, well, he actually, he was the innocent party in this. He was a good guy, but he was having a relationship with the woman that was originally his maid. So
wait, like, he was cheating on his wife, but he was a good guy.
No, he was not cheating. They had separated at that point. Oh, yeah. I see. So she was like his ex.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, of course I believe you. And so, like, you know, anyway, it's a fun show, but it's very much like, it's ridiculous. I do not think you would like it.
I Samantha already hate and I it.
Both like it.
The fact that the title is Devious Maze is enough for me.
And it was a Spanish telenovela before it became for American audiences. So it's really over the top. But anyway, back to my point. Diane Betty is saying to Rita, it's hard because there's just like they have a lot of names. She's going like, oh, I'm your girlfriend. No, we're in love. We love each other. Remember? Like, or she's trying to paint this like new, like, oh, I'm such a happy, cute little like angel of like, I'm the perfect manic pixie dream girl, like that you've always wanted. I'm your perfect girlfriend. You know, you're like this ideal type that I can fit perfectly, because as I was watching the movie and then they started having sex with each other and she's like, I'm so in love with you. I was like, girl, slow down. I was like, y'all just met and she does not even know who she is.
Yeah.
You're not in love with her because you don't know her. Like that's just what it is, you know? And so I was like, wow, that's moving fast. But then as they revealed the second act or whatever you call it, I was like, oh, okay. This is starting to make a lot more sense now. So that's my theory. I think that the entire first part was a dream and then the rest is the reality. And that the bad things that happen within the dream, like finding the corpse and the bumbling hitman and then the guy behind the diner are all like manifestations of her guilt.
Sure. Okay.
So that's what I think.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I kind of thought that as well when I watched it. Like, I think we've talked about the story. I think it's called Incident on Owl Creek Bridge.
Where the guy, I think you talked to me about it.
Just in case people listening aren't sure. But so it's about this guy who's getting hung on a bridge. I think
for committing crimes. Oh, wait, was that crimes. A Twilight Zone episode? I think it was a Twilight Zone episode.
Well, it was a book, but I don't know which came first. I don't know if one was based on the other.
I'm pretty sure. I'm like 95% sure it was a Twilight Zone episode.
It's very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah. I watched it in the past couple of years.
It's a trope that's been done a lot in movies anyway, but so he's getting hung on a bridge, but when he gets hung, he escapes, he makes it to the side of the river, runs away, gets married, has a happy life, and then all of that was just like some hallucination he had between like falling and getting, you know, like actually hanging when the rope actually catches and kills him. So I kind of had that thought when I was watching this, that the third act was the reality and the first two acts were like whatever hallucination she was suffering because of her guilt.
Right.
And the first two acts had like a nightmarish quality, like occasionally would pop in like a dream or something would have. But my biggest like critique of the movie is that I wish that they had done something a little bit more obvious, like all she did was shot herself to kill herself in the real story. And I wish that they would have maybe shown that, like, that struggle a little bit to see, like, oh, what you saw in the first part. Because they spent two acts of the movie. Like, the majority of the movie is spent on this hallucination or dream or whatever.
Right.
So I wish that they would have tied the two together a little bit better. Like, even go so far as to have it, like, maybe she's going to hang herself and that's the dream she has while she's falling. I wouldn't mind if it was that obvious, because then at least it would close that like doubt that I had, because they spend so much time on this hallucination and I'm not really sure when she has it, because the end of the movie goes from like her seeing, because the hitman was like, I'll put this blue key on your coffee table to let you know that Camilla's been killed. So once she sees the blue key, she just kind of like goes crazy and sees hallucinations of those two old people that were at the airport in the beginning of the movie. And
something else,
And then she like shoots herself.
Right.
So I just wish that they had maybe tied the two t- tied everything together a little bit better to be like, oh, what you were watching was this dream or hallucination or whatever in manifesting her guilt. Because I think your interpretation is the best, you know, like, I think that's what probably the movie was. But I just found it to be a little bit disjointed in a way that I was like, why couldn't you tie it together a little bit better? So
I think the thing with David Lynch is that I can see a lot of, like, Leo Carra, or, you know, from Holy Motors, the director. I can kind of see, like, maybe a parallel. I think David Lynch is a better director just because Leo Carra is like, I'm just going to throw a bunch of shit at you and hope that it sticks and you're supposed to get it. And if you don't, you're fucking stupid. And you're like, I guess I'm fucking stupid then because I don't get it. So, But I think David Lynch is more like, hey, I'm going to throw a bunch of stuff at you. And it is kind of coherent in a way, but it's up to you as the watcher, the listener, the reader, whatever, to interpret it. And I think that, like, something like Memento is also a great example of that, where you're like, you do get the gist of the movie, but at the same time, you're like, wait, what the fuck did I just fucking watch? You know what I mean? And it took me like 3 or 4 times before I was like, okay, so I think he killed his wife by, like, overdosing her with insulin and blah, blah, you know what I mean?
It was suicide. Like, his wife committed suicide in Memento.
See, it's been so long.
Didn't she keep reminding him, like, oh, you forgot to give me my medicine.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah. I thought that.
It's been a while since I've seen it as well, but I thought that that's what happened. Like, he killed her, but I think she committed suicide.
It's been so long.
She used his amnesia against him.
Yeah. Right. Explosive amnesia.
I could be wrong because, like you, it's been a long time.
Yeah,
but it was a wild movie as well. I think Christopher Nolan did that movie, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He did.
That explains why it's better than a David Lynch movie.
I would agree that I think Memento is better than Mulholland Drive. I think Memento is more coherent. And the thing is, I think if you watch it from the ending to the beginning, you'll make it make sense. It's just that I know we're kind of getting off track, but the thing about Memento is
we might as well do all of our tropes on this, our last episode.
I know. Oh, it's sad. The thing about Memento is that you are, I still remember this guy's name, Leonard Shelby. Probably the reason I remember it is because my sister's name is Shelby. But anyway, Leonard Shelby, Lenny, you're put essentially into his shoes, so the confusion is meant to be there, because you're also like, okay, so we're watching what he's seeing and it's not making sense to me, but it's also not making sense to him, but we have the benefit of, like, a long-term memory, long-term memory,
right?
And so we get to see everything that happens and eventually this ending. And I think I don't disagree with you about Mulholland Drive, that there is a lot of, it's kind of just like it does make sense to me. The whole dream sequence makes a lot of sense. I think that's probably, but
I think it's not that it doesn't make sense necessarily. I mean, the overall overarching storyline makes sense.
Yeah.
But I just think in terms of, like, writing and good storytelling, I would have liked to have a little bit more visual cohesion showing, like, this is the hallucination or dream she has during this, before she kills herself.
Right.
As she lays dying, maybe, you know?
Yeah. It did feel like the suicide was very sudden, you know? Mm-hmm. And to me, it was kind of weird to show a dead body that was, like, more or less her, you know, in her dream, you know?
Like, yeah.
Which would have made more sense if it was like the the incident at Owl Creek?
Yeah, Owl Creek Bridge.
Yeah. Owl Creek Bridge, yeah. So if it was like just like a fleeting moment in between life and death, you know. But this was kind of more just like, oh, she went insane and then she shot herself, and there probably could have, I mean, I'm agreeing with you more or less that there probably could have been more of a discussion or insight into her feeling this immense amount of guilt, because I don't think she committed suicide out of depression. I think she committed it out of guilt. I think she was just feeling so guilty. She killed this woman that she loved.
Mm-hmm. I think it was maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, she definitely wasn't in good headspace before she had her killed.
No, she was, she looked like she was almost like on crack or something. You know, she's got like super dark circles in her eyes, didn't look like she had slept. Mm-hmm. The whole like angry masturbation scene, I was like, okay, we're going to angrily masturbate now, okay. And you know, I read online, or I think I had asked Google or something, because I was curious as to how old Naomi Watts was in this movie, and she was 33.
Oh, wow.
I guess people were angry because she was too old to play the role, and I was like...
I thought she looked like she was, like, 23.
Looks like she's in her 20s also. Yeah.
Who cares? Why couldn't it just be any age?
Well, and it's also, like, getting angry that Superman is played by an English man, and Superman's not even from Earth. So let's rethink why we're pissed off about that.
Yeah.
Or, like, the Little Mermaid being black. It's like, mermaids are fictional creatures.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit?
Oh, my gosh. I know.
It's like, who gives a shit? So
I did think this movie was a little bit fetishy, because it was like, whenever women make out, they take off their bras and tops, you know? It was like, they might as well just been like,
I'm naked.
What if I touch you here? What if I touch you here? Oh, have you ever done this before? Boobs. Like, it felt like something that if you were like a ninth grade boy and you were like, I'm gonna go watch this art house movie, and then it's just like two women boobs all out, make it just kissing, and I'm just like, okay, this feels like something that a teenage boy would really like. I don't know, like, that's how people make out, right? Like, lesbians never make out with their clothes on.
No, never. They always have to take off all their clothes.
Don't take off, yeah, like, you know. They keep their shorts on, but they're topless.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen...
As soon as it starts, it's not even like, there's no... Sorry, I keep interrupting you. No, there's no build-up.
Have you ever seen the British Inbetweeners?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's about teenage boys. Okay. And, like, it's very much geared towards teenage boys. I've seen it. I don't care about ever seeing it again. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone I know that's like of my age, because you're just not gonna be into it. It's definitely a guy thing. But there's a scene where one of the guys is about to have sex, and he's like, they're like in bed and they're naked, and he thinks that he's like inside her, but he's not. He's just like her thighs, and he comes and he's like, we did it. And she's like, no, we didn't. Not even close. It just reminded me of that. Like, it's like the whole show, one of the boys is like one of those who's like, he's like, I was having sex with two Playboy models and like blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, okay, I'm sure you were. Like, totally. But all of his friends are like, ooh, tell us more. How did you have sex? Ooh, sex. Sex. And so, and then later, he like gets a girlfriend, and he's like just absolutely like wrecked over this girlfriend, and you were like 100% you lost your virginity to this girl, you fucking little shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't act like the big man on campus, because you aren't, you know what I mean? Anyway, it is kind of a funny show, but it is definitely geared towards boys. So
yeah. Well, no, I mean, like, it is what it is, but I just felt like this movie was like
boobs.
Yeah. Like,
boob.
I don't know.
It's
possible for women to make out with their tops on.
It is. We did a lot of boobs in this. So speaking of boobs, so Billy Ray Cyrus is in this.
Oh my gosh.
Which I thought was funny. I want to talk about the director. So played by Justin Theroux, which his name was what? Shoot, I just exited out.
Adam Kesher.
Kesher, okay. So Kesher is the director. My first thought, and this had nothing to do with the film, but how does he see out of his peripheral vision with those glasses on?
I know, he's wearing like goggles, basically.
Like, they're like black, huge bands. And I was like, there's no way that he's able to see.
Weird. Yeah,
there's
I bet it was no way. Annoying
it was
to wear.
I would have like hated those. Mm-hmm. I mean, because like the glasses, I guess I don't even think about whether or not I can see. Are you looking now to see if you can see? Can you?
Yeah, I've had glasses before that had thicker like bows on the side that were a little bit more annoying. So I prefer ones that are thinner because of peripheral vision, but
yeah,
his were pretty bad.
His were like terrible. I was like, all right, well, you shouldn't maybe drive with those because you might like not be able to see the car beside you, you know, unless you turn your head.
Yeah.
So he wanted, or they, he had, he's a director and he wanted, he was making this movie. Was it the Sylvia North? No, that's right. We only got the name of the film like once. And they wanted him to cast Melissa George's character, whose name is Camilla.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like in the beginning. This movie is confusing. So it was in the beginning and he's like, no, I don't want to do that. So he takes off, heads home. And first of all, that espresso scene really bummed me out.
That was so gross.
I was like, why did you just spit it out? Like,
and he spit it out so nasty, in such a nasty way. He didn't just like spit it out. He like vomited, it, like, dribbled, spit it out. Like, it was so gross. Like they came up, so they had this, I don't know who he was, somebody. He came.
Like him and the Dan Hedaya.
I don't know, mafia or something, saying you have to cast this girl.
Right.
And then somebody brought in, he's like, we went through a lot of trouble. We finally found a good espresso that you would like. And he took a drink. It was the slowest scene I've ever seen. Back and forth. Took a drink.
Yeah, I could have
gone without that scene. And then, like, really, in such a gross way, spit it out. And I was like, what's the point of all of this? What's the point of any of this?
I didn't understand that either.
There's no point. And, like, he goes up to his house, and there's no point to that scene either.
No, there isn't. No, I know.
He sees his wife in bed with Billy Ray Cyrus, who's, like, a pool man or something in this. He's not Billy Ray Cyrus. But I actually was amused. So he comes into the bedroom and sees them, and Billy Ray Cyrus is like, it's just best that you leave and just don't think about this. And I thought, like, that's so interesting.
He's like,
and
then, cool, dude, don't worry about it.
And then he steals her.
Yes, I banged your wife, but don't worry about it,
bro. Yeah, we're in bed in the middle of it. But then Adam steals her jewelry box and walks out the door, and she's like, where are you going? And Billy Ray says to her, he's probably really upset. And I was like, I just think it was slightly comedic for somebody who just got caught by the woman he's sleeping with his husband to be like, no, let's empathize with him. He's upset.
I know.
Just saw you and me in bed together. Yeah.
And then he pours all the paint in her,
in her jewelry box.
I was like, why wouldn't you pour the jewelry into the paint? That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
I would have been like, it's way less messy. And then you just put the top back on.
Yeah.
Put it away.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't catch you, then whatever. Life.
Yeah. Well, she was going to catch him. She ran out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was.
I thought that whole scene was like the chintziest, most melodramatic, low budget, bad production, bad acting.
And there was no reason to have the girlfriend in there. It's not like she was one of the actresses that was
There was
gonna
no
be
reason
in this role, whatever. And even Melissa George's character didn't seem like she was terribly essential.
It didn't. Yeah. What was the point of her? What was the point? Oh, except Melissa George is the person who Camilla is apparently having a relationship with at the end of the movie. Though when they're at the party, wasn't Adam Kesher telling
Adam,
at the end of the movie when they're at the party where Diane sees Camilla and Adam, or they're seemingly going to announce that they're possibly engaged, but we never find out.
Like, right.
We never find out what they're actually announcing. But
she was like kissing Camilla.
Mm-hmm, but she's
Rita Camilla was kissing real Camilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a snippet of conversation where Adam is talking about his wife and the pool guy. So maybe that really happened.
Yeah.
And that she added it into her hallucination because that's how he came to be available to be with Camilla. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But then the actress comes up, or the woman, Melissa George's character, comes up and really kisses Camilla and's like, meet me downstairs in 10 minutes or whatever.
Right.
And Diane sees it, and Camilla sees Diane seeing it, and that's when she decides to hire a hitman, I guess.
Yeah, see, to me, it didn't seem like Melissa George's character was even essential. Also, this is a thing, it's a very small thing, but it drives me up the wall when they cat, like, you can really tell that that's probably not Melissa George singing.
Oh, right.
Why don't you cast a singer who sounds like they could be that person?
Or, you know, why don't you just have her be an actress in a scene that doesn't involve singing?
Hire someone who can sing. actress and she's only in the movie for like all of 10 minutes.
Yeah, you know? I don't understand the decision for that, but
like, it's not like anyone's gonna be like, oh no, Melissa George isn't in this movie. Like, who, you know, it's Melissa George. Like, it's like, whatever, she's fine.
I feel like we're on the cusp of saying her name too much. anyway, yeah.
She was in Lie to Me, and her and Tim Roth had excellent chemistry, like very sexy. I was like, okay, well, interesting. All right. I was talking to my sister about him like months and months ago, and I was talking about the show, and I was like, you know, Lie to Me is kind of stupid. Like, it's kind of a stupid show. There's a bunch of parts where one of the characters will explain something that you're like, as an audience member, I understand this already. You don't need to explain it. Let it be subtext. I get it. And she'll be like, the something obvious of the blah, blah, blah. He's angry at his father because his father cheated on his mother. And you're like, oh, no shit. Really? Is he? Oh, my God. I never guessed that. Anyway. And but I was like, but man, Tim Roth is so dynamic. Like, he's such a dynamic actor. I really enjoy watching him. And my sister goes, and he's kind of sexy. And I was like, oh, my God. Thank God you said something.
I kind of agree with you. I think he's super talented. I really like him in Reservoir Dogs.
He's very good.
And he's in Pulp Fiction. I like him in Pulp Fiction. He has a smaller part in Pulp Fiction, but I really, I think he does a really good job in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, he's just a lot of fun to watch. You know, he's a very, like...
Him and Sam Rockwell should do a movie where they play brothers. God,
I would love that. The dream team.
Yeah.
Another dream team. I have so many already.
How many dream teams?
I have so many already. I can't think of any of them, but they're there. I did note that the colors of red and blue were prevalent throughout the movie. I think that the blue especially was prevalent with Diane's kind of like mental state. Mm-hmm. I think that the more you saw the blue, the more it was indicative of like this not being real, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
And then I think the red is more like a passionate kind of romantic set, you know, because first of all, the apartment that she was in was gorgeous. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, how much is this a month? It's too much for me. I could tell you that immediately, but it was beautiful. But it was very warm colors, like a lot of yellows, a lot of oranges. So it was very like a warm and welcoming environment. And then she had lived in that other, you show her in the other place, and it's like grays and blues. So it's like very depressing. Like a sad little
dirty apartment.
Yeah, like it looked dirty too.
It's all dirty. And I'm like, man, you'd feel so much better if you just like cleaned.
It didn't look like a bad place either. Like, just turn on some lights. Yeah. It looked like it was kind of cute. It just.
Dust, vacuum, scrub your fridge because it's inexplicably filthy on the outside.
All things you're saying, and I feel like I need to do.
your fridge is not the fridge.
No,
the movie,
but no. No. Remember that one time that I cleaned it out and I found really, really old strawberries in there? I was like, so I found out what that red liquid was. It's strawberries that have been in there for like 5 years.
Oh, geez.
They're dust now, literally. Anyway, okay. So I noticed that. And then there was like the end with the person wearing that blue wig at Silencio, the like Simpson type person, and they were like, Silencio,
and it's like everything, like they kept saying at Silencio, like everything is an illusion.
Yeah,
so I'm like, what's the illusion? Is the, which story is the real story? I mean, I think I've settled on, and I agree with your interpretation, but I guess you could always interpret it any other direction well.
I think that's what Lynch wants, is that I think he wants you to view the movie and go, well, tell me what you thought was going on, you know? And I love that. I personally love that because, again, it does remind me of the Leo Carrà thing, but I think Leo Carrà is definitely more of like an asshole where he's like, well, if you don't understand it, I just can't tell you if you don't understand it, I don't know to tell you. And you're like, all right. Versus David Lynch is like, interesting. I want to hear your interpretation of it. And you're like, okay, thank you, Mr. Lynch. I would love to tell you that.
He doesn't want to hear anything. Anybody who makes a movie like that isn't interested. When I was typing him yesterday,
he really wanted to know.
No, I need a little bit more direction. I appreciate that you like that sort of open-endedness, but I need slightly a little bit more direction. That's what I gravitate towards. But
I get it. I totally get it.
I do feel like the most horrible thing that David Lynch did was that So at the beginning of the movie, Camilla slash Rita is in a car. They get hit. Like, they're going to kill her. The drivers are going to kill her. And then, because they pull over on Mulholland Drive. And I assume they're taking her up to the director's house, but they stop. And she's like, we don't stop here.
Yeah.
Because that's what Diane said.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. Now I get what you're saying. Okay.
But then there's, like, some high schoolers or teenagers or whatever.
Just absolutely tomfoolery teenagers happening you can find.
Where they're racing on this curvy road and they run into the car and she's in an accident. She stumbles out. She's obviously concussed because she has amnesia later, but she stumbles away from the scene and, like, walks down into the valley, I guess. And then we go back to the car crash, the aftermath, where they're looking at the scene and the actor Robert Forster is there. And I got really excited because I was like,
I've seen him in stuff. You know
what? Maybe I will like this movie because I like him. And David Lynch did us all dirty because he's in the movie for 3 minutes at most.
What else is he? I know I've seen him.
He's in Jackie Brown. He's in,
Robert Forster. Let's see.
He's in so much. He's in The Descendants.
Does he look like my dad a little bit?
Maybe a little bit,
You kind of see that, mm-hmm. right?
Me, Myself, and Irene. Olympus Has Fallen.
I've seen that one. Wait, have I seen that
one? He's in a lot of things. I'm just kind of like...
Oh, yeah, he was in Twin Peaks.
He was in Twin Peaks.
Well, he was in the 2017 one.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because there was a bunch of them. There was, like... They had the original, and I think it was, like, 92, 93, and then they had, like... And the original only lasted, like, 2 seasons.
He was in Breaking Bad. Anyway, he's really cool, and I really like him, and he was only in the movie for 3 minutes, and that made me really angry.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He was in it for all of 3 minutes. Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the scene where there's this, like, room with the guy that's kind of unique looking, and he's calling the shots on who Adam casts, and he's like, the actress is still alive, what do we do? And what is the point of all that? Like, are they the mafia? Right. Who are they? What are they? Why are they calling these shots? I guess we're not supposed to care or know, maybe.
I think maybe it's, well, I mean, so we've all, I should say, majority of us have dreams, because not everyone dreams. People that suffer with personality disorders don't always dream, which is, I think, I don't know if it's, like, all personality disorders. I'm going to assume it's probably more, like, antisocial personality disorder, which is, like, psychopathy. I mean, we've all had dreams where just things happen, and you're like, I don't understand where that came from. Why was it there? You know? And I think... For me personally, like, when I dream something and I'm trying to, like, fill in the gaps, like, if I want to tell someone about it, I'm like, kind of, like, adding little things in so it makes sense to the other person as I'm telling them the story, you know what I mean? And maybe in Diane's mind, having these, like, kind of, like, really, like, sophisticated hitmen were, like, she was like, oh, well, this is how it's going to happen versus, like, how, you know, this bumbling hip man, idiotic person. Or I don't know. You know what I mean? I guess.
Well, I don't really have
an explanation
for that.
They were,
like, they were mobsters or something.
Right.
Or Hollywood executives that were trying to get this actress the part.
Right.
And tell him how to cast his movie. But they never really explained them. And, like, the guy was in this weird room. And
yeah,
I didn't understand.
I think he was in Twin Peaks. I feel like he was in.
He has a very unique look.
There's a couple of...
His name is Michael J. Anderson. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's him. That's in Twin Peaks. There's, like, a bunch of scenes where they're in, like, a red room. And they're... I don't know how to explain it. You understand what they're saying, but it sounds like they're talking backwards.
Okay.
It's really... It's not scary. It's really unsettling. So you're just like, oh, I don't like this. This is making me, like, really uncomfortable. Like, let's just move on. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's so there's, like, a couple of scenes like that. I saw Twin Peaks probably over 5 years ago. It was definitely pre-COVID. So it's been a long time. So just put that, I don't really remember a lot of it. But, So I also wrote down that Betty, well, and I feel like I said this before, that Betty seems to represent this overly positive and likable person of herself. And she's also an extraordinary actress because she had tried out for the Sylvia North story, which was where she met Camilla.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, nah, we're good. See ya. You're not what we want. And then Camilla got the role. And then there's that scene where they're like, where like her and like Adam are like kissing in the car, and he's like trying to show this other guy, like, oh, this is how you kiss her, or whatever. I just like, it reminded me, okay, so there's a scene in Frasier where Diane, you know, comes into town, and she wrote like a play about Cheers, and it's so self-serving. It's incredibly narcissistic. It is like, you're watching it, you're like, oh, this is just awful. This makes me want to throw up all over your face, ma'am. And there is a character that plays, fucking, what's his name? Ted Danson's character.
Oh, but
it's
Sam?
Like a, it's not like, yeah, so it's like someone playing Sam. Like, you know, it's not Sam, but it's someone, yeah, in this play. And she, like, is showing this person who's playing her how to kiss him, and they had this like really like passionate kissing scene, and then she's like, oh, it's okay, so that's how you do it, and then you're just gonna kiss him. And I was like, okay, if I was that actress, I would have been like, absolutely not, I'm not gonna make out with him after you just stuck your tongue down his throat. I'm sorry, but that really, really grosses me out. Like, he's got to go brush his teeth and wash his mouth out with soap or something. Like, I know it sounds weird, but to me, like, that's, like, gives me, like, major ick. Like, that's gross to me. I'm like, oh, ew, no, I would never, like, I wouldn't want to kiss someone after they just kiss someone. That would be a deal breaker.
100%. I would just think that surely the director just wants to kiss this actor and are using it as an excuse. Well, yeah,
that's the point. But I was just thinking, like, as I was watching this guy standing there as he's, like, Adam's making out Camilla, if I was the actor, I would have been like, can we just, like, do this tomorrow?
I don't want to. Yeah, you're like, well, you can do it better than me. Congratulations.
Yeah, I was like, why don't you cast yourself as a part then, Adam?
And then Adam's like, kill the lights. And I was like, kill the lights? There are people what? There. What are you guys like, going to do it?
They're like, we're going to bang on stage.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Guys want to watch? Free show. Yeah,
she wanted Diane to stay, I guess, to show Diane.
She was like, Diane, like, how sexy me and my new husband, whatever. Yeah. Camilla, I mean, Rita Camilla did really seem like a giant piece of shit. Like, she continuously flaunted her relationship in front of Diane. And the scene, I thought, was very subtle at the end, where Diane's getting increasingly upset and angry, and you can see, like, tears, like, she's fighting these tears coming to her eyes. I thought that Naomi Watts did a really good part. Mm-hmm. I actually think she did great in the movie. I know that you were kind of iffy about it, but
it's not any individual. Well, I think she was fine. But I think it was more the script and the direction than the actors and actresses' talents.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think I could tell that most of them were talented, and I thought she did fine. She did a good job. And I agree, like, that scene where she was, like, slowly getting upset was really good. But I think it was overall, I thought the performances were really not great.
Yeah.
Because of the script. And right. Probably because of David Lynch's creative decisions.
Yeah. So, would you recommend the movie?
I don't think I would. In fact, I would not recommend this movie. Okay. Thank you, John, for suggesting it. But
thank you.
It is not for me. How about you? Would you recommend this movie?
Probably. Yeah. I liked it. I enjoyed it for what it was. It kept my attention the entire time. I was intrigued by it. It, again, I had already seen it, so it was kind of like watching it like for the first time, which was nice. And I liked it. I had fun with it. Yeah, I think I would recommend it. So, yeah. But anyway, this is it, guys.
This is it. So, yeah, thank you to Mike.
Yeah, thank you to Mike so much. For doing
our
theme music.
It's pretty awesome. I feel like our show really jumped up 10 levels and we got really cool theme music. Thank you to Lauren's parents.
Yes.
For gifting her this beautiful equipment.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
I mean.
And thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. This was Lauren's idea. One time she said, we love talking about movies. We should just do a podcast.
And I'm getting emotional. I can feel myself getting emotional again.
So it's been really fun.
It has been really fun.
And I'm just going to say, Isabella, great listener. Nicole, great listener. John, great listener. Mike, great listener. Ken, great listener. I'm trying to think of other people who suggested things.
The guy who suggested Supersize Me, thank you.
Yes.
And hey, James Pratt and James Chris Pratt, Frontiero.
Chris Frontiero, Samantha, thank you for being on, Samantha.
And Anne Marie, too.
Anne Marie, Val. And also, I just thought, Mike's friend Gabe, every once in a while will mention stuff about the podcast to me, so I think he listens on occasion, so thanks for listening. Yeah,
thanks, Gabe.
And, jeez.
Like, this has been fun. It has been fun. It's been a very wild and interesting and great experience, and I would never give it up for the world, you know?
No, it was awesome.
And I got to do it with one of my best friends.
We were like, a good team. I was talking to a friend of mine who wanted to start her own podcast, not movie related, and she was like, it's just really hard to find somebody who will want to do it with me, who's as interested in this with me, you know, who wants to do it weekly, who wants to talk about this, because she wanted to do it about wrestling. And she was like, somebody who wants to talk about wrestling, who has the interest, who has the time. And when she was saying that, I was like, I am so lucky that Lauren and I do this, and we get along, and we like what we're doing, and it's been fun. And if we were a sitcom, 5 years is a pretty good run.
We would still be getting money in syndication. That's so
looking money, for money, those money. Syndication.
I mean, I would love to be like $1 million type of episode, like Friends, but you know, like
Samantha, our other friend Samantha F. Thank you so much.
Oh yes, yes.
You requested a lot of things. Yes, 28 days later.
Did, yes.
And you were a big cheerleader, so thank you for that as well. I just don't want to forget anyone.
I know, I don't either.
I feel like I'm making my Academy Awards
speech. I know.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank.
And McDonald's for making those little burgers, without which I may have never been late. The LA City bus system for taking a chance on an unknown kid.
I love it. It's perfect. So I think that's it.
I think that's it.
We are done. Yeah. We're officially done, guys.
We're officially done. Our stuff may end up being removed from Spotify in the next couple months, but we're going to try to look into uploading it on YouTube where you can look
at old episodes. We want to keep it either way. We want to keep it alive, and YouTube is free. So
for old episodes, so you get all of our backlog.
We have put, again, it takes about 10,000 hours to be an expert. We've probably put about 5,000 hours in this. We're halfway to being an expert.
We've done almost enough to be real. I think we're experts. Plus a lifetime of movie education. So,
it's been really, really fun and really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
bye-bye.
Bye.